Do you recall a day where everything clicked into place, where the world seemed to move in perfect harmony and every task flowed effortlessly? Introducing you to London Nootropics, adaptogenic coffee blends, thoughtfully crafted to elevate and balance your day, delivering all the perks of your beloved coffee, plus the incredible benefits of adaptogens, which also help to dial down those less than loved side effects like jitters, anxiety, and that all too familiar crash. A premium mix of medicinal mushroom extracts and other potent adaptogens, each blend is targeted for a specific purpose depending on what you need. Flow enhances your mental clarity and focus. Zen is your go-to for stress relief and balance. And Mojo offers that clean, natural energy lift. It's the synergy between caffeine and adaptogens that works wonders, allowing us to relish the caffeine buzz without the drawbacks, ensuring a smooth, sustained energy flow. My top pick is the Zen blend. It's a lifesaver for those of us who are caffeine sensitive, and not to mention comes in the most charming packaging. So why not elevate your coffee experience with London Nootropics? Discover the perfect blend, find your flow, and enjoy an exclusive 20% discount with the code SaturnReturns at londonnootropics.com.
For me, the thought of cancelling my wedding and quitting being a lawyer at one moment in my life was totally unthinkable.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Saturn Returns with me, Kaggy Dunlop. This is a podcast that aims to bring clarity during transitional times where there can be confusion and doubt. In today's episode, I wanted to share a conversation between myself and not only a friend, but someone who has been part of the Saturn Returns community for a long time. Because whilst I get to interview so many incredible thought leaders, at the heart of what Saturn Returns is about connecting and being vulnerable and sharing our stories that are sometimes hard, sometimes uncomfortable, but they are also incredibly unifying. So Manon is someone that I was introduced to a couple of years ago, and we became fast friends. She is now the CEO of Harvest Series. So if you guys aren't familiar with Harvest, it's this incredible summit, I guess, that happens in May. I'm going to be going, and they have amazing thought leaders taking part. Esther Perel's going to be doing it this year, and I cannot wait. And we really kind of bonded, and she told me her story about her Saturn Returns journey and how she kind of discovered the podcast while she was going through this huge transition. And it really felt appropriate to have her on the show to share this, because I feel like it will resonate with many of you that might be going through something similar, because it is just a kind of classic Saturn Returns experience, in the sense that when we feel we have everything society tells us we should want, and yet something feels off. And so this episode is all around trusting your inner knowing and following your heart. So I hope you enjoy it.
Manon, welcome to Saturn Returns.
Hello.
We have just been talking for 2 hours, so like I said, we should have been recording. But for the audience that doesn't know, would you be able to explain a little bit about the work that you do and who you are, aside from being one of my dearest friends?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I am running a company called Harvest Series, and we're, as you know, because you've come to, I think, two now. We're organizing events all around the world, primarily a summit in Turkey, where we are talking about the important topics around the self, society, and the planet. So quite a broad spectrum of topics. And the idea is that we're bringing people together and some incredible speakers. So we've had people like Gabor Mate, who I know you know very well, and Andrew Huberman and Mark Hyman and Dan Buettner and Sylvia Earle. So a huge spectrum of different people who are really at the top of their game. who are really sharing incredible ideas. Mm-hmm. And we want to create a space for transformation and inspiration, wherever that comes from. So whether it's from a psychotherapist or a climate scientist, or actually in May we have an astrobiologist coming.
As well as Esther Perel.
Yes, as well as Esther Perel.
Because it's such an obvious combination.
I know, but it's we're really trying to provide a platform for the full spectrum of transformative ideas, and they come from all different places. And we all know Esther Perel's work. I mean, I think a lot of people do know her work, and it's incredible, and is the core of, you know, our relationships are at the core of everything. But it's cool to mix it in with the astrobiologists and the climate scientists.
Totally. And yet the first time, because we connected through a mutual friend, Farley, who came to Lisbon.
Yeah,
she then was hanging out with you. I think someone put her in touch with you. And then you were already listening to Saturn Return.
Yes, I was. I didn't actually know what a Saturn Return was until I listened to your podcast.
How did you discover the podcast?
How did I discover the podcast? I think I was going through a bit of a tricky time at that time. I mean, so many tricky times that I've gone through in my life. But I remember quite distinctly that podcasts were featuring big time in my life. Mm-hmm. And what was really helping me, I was searching for stories, because what was really helping me was listening to other people's stories of adversity or just difficult times in their lives and how they had got through it. And suddenly it was opening. I think I wasn't finding those stories in my everyday life.
Was this when you were in London?
I was in London, yeah. At the time I was living in London. And hilariously had the most colossal Saturn return, but I didn't know it was a Saturn return when it was happening. And then I listened to your podcast and was like, oh.
But how did you find the podcast? I do not remember.
I think I was Googling. No, I don't remember exactly how I found it. I think it might have been one of your speakers. Mm-hmm. One of your speakers that I was interested in.
So how long ago was this? This was kind of right towards the beginning, I guess.
Yeah, I think it would have been towards the beginning. Maybe like three. How long have you been doing it? 3 years ago?
Yeah, like... Yeah. Four, I think we're 4 years old now.
So. I think it was season one for sure.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so what was going on at the time? Because you had one of those Saturn return experiences. Like, my one was very much everything came sort of like crumbling down. Mm. And all the things I was trying to force just weren't really working. And they were kind of ripped away from me. Whereas I often, because people are like, oh, can you be going through, you know, can it be fine? Can it just mean like everything's good? I'm like, yeah, it can also mean an up leveling. If you've been living authentically, it can mean that, you know, you get that promotion, that, you know, marriage, children, whatever it might be. And then there's also the scenario where people have kind of created the perfect image. They're doing the right career. They found the right partner by society standards or their families or whatever it might be. And then they get to that point where they go, oh, my God, I'm miserable.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I had exactly that. I always say it's the spiritual awakening that comes with getting absolutely everything, in inverted commas, you ever wanted. Mm. Or that you ever thought you wanted or thought that mattered. And then realizing that it's not really about that. And I was an expert at kind of ticking the boxes, let's say. So I really believed that there were certain things in your life that would make you happy. And if you just got them, external things, so like a good career and earning lots of money so that you are financially independent and being in a relationship or being married and owning a home, and all of those things happened. The thing is that you can have all of those things and be wildly happy if they're in alignment, or you can have all of those things and be desperately unhappy and unsatisfied because it's not truly in alignment and it doesn't truly represent who you are and your values. And I recently read this thing, this concept that someone wrote about, which was misalignment burnout. And I read it and I was like, yeah, that's what it was. It was a series of choices that I had made in my life that didn't really reflect my values and didn't really reflect who I was. And so within the space of about 6 months.
Okay, before we get into like the unraveling, what were the things that you had? Like, let's talk about the relationship, the job that you were in. Mm. Like, describe what that all looked like.
Yeah, so at the time I was a lawyer, and I was a lawyer in a very, very prominent law firm, a top London law firm. It was very prestigious. And
had your parents wanted you to be a lawyer, or is that something you
just
wanted?
No, not really. They hadn't pressured me into it, although no one had sort of said that I needed to do that, but you get a heck of a lot of external validation. And if like me...
Yeah, law's always like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. And if like me, external validation is like crack cocaine, then it feels pretty good when you go to a dinner party and there's like a moment of someone being kind of impressed when you say, yeah, I'm a lawyer. And I liked it. But the reality was I liked how people reacted to me when I told them I was a lawyer, because people make assumptions, I think, that you're like wildly intelligent or like, you know, what I don't know what it is they're being impressed by, but they do. And the reality is it's super hard work and it's a tough environment to work in. It's like very masculine, very fast-paced, very competitive. And for some people, they thrive in that environment. But for me, I didn't. Mm-hmm. And there's no space for, you know, some of the things that were important to me, like creativity and maybe being a bit kind of, I'm not so in the box, you know, I'm a bit, and there wasn't that much space for that. And so, it was an amazing career. And it is an amazing job. And so I got a lot of validation for that, even if my family hadn't necessarily said, you must be a lawyer.
Yeah.
But I was used to that because I have always been very, like, the A-star student.
High achieving.
Yeah, exactly. The kind of insecure overachiever that is, like, constantly needs that validation. And then I had a house that I owned in London at the time, which was... a big achievement. It is a big achievement, yeah, to own a home in London. It's expensive and most people are not able to do that. But what's involved is basically staying in the job that you don't love because you have to earn a certain amount of money to pay the mortgage and things like that. So it all kind of gets connected. And then I was engaged to be married to an unbelievable human being who was the most gorgeous, wonderful, hilarious person. And so I got a lot of recognition, you know, externally from people that they felt maybe I had the perfect life. You know, they kind of reflected that back to me because on the outside, it all looked...
Ticked all the boxes.
Yeah, it ticked all the boxes. And in many ways, it was great. Elements of it were amazing.
How old were you at this point when you were engaged?
I was 29.
There you go.
Yeah.
So how long were you together for before you got engaged?
We were together for 7 years.
So it's, yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing because, you know, those are 7 quite formative years.
Yeah, so massively.
Yeah. And you change a lot during that time. And also, we were kids. Like, we didn't really... I think we didn't really know what I know now, which is in a relationship, I might ask more questions of like, where do you want to live? How many children do you want to have? Like, what are the things that are important to you? How do you want to live your life? Mm. And I'm actually quite a gypsy. And that's,
at heart.
Yeah. And It's important to know that because it's not that compatible with someone who maybe doesn't feel like that, doesn't want to travel so much or wants to set up a home and roots and really build something. And so I think it's important to kind of recognize that things can change like that. And we didn't have those important conversations.
Did you feel that you knew that about yourself even?
No, exactly.
And that's a problem I think we often don't.
Totally. How can you articulate that to someone else when you haven't even articulated it to yourself?
Mm.
I remember at the time I worked with a therapist and it was the first time I'd ever done talking therapy. And I remember him asking me the question, but like, what do you want? And I was so devastated by that question, because when you are asked that question and you don't have the answer to it, it kind of rocks you and shakes you. And I kind of was like, what do you mean, what do you want? And then when you actually ascertain what you do want...
And it's not what you're doing or how you're living.
It's scary. And not only is it not what you're doing or how you're living, it also might be quite kooky. It might be... And no one else will get
and
it.
And everyone's like, well, why would you want to do that when you've got this?
Exactly.
You know, you've got everything that's going on. And I think that that's why that particular story that I think a lot of people relate to is a very complicated one, because society is telling you all the things you should want and do, and if you're achieving them, it's, mm-hmm. and succeeding, you get congratulated and validated, and people are like, oh wow, you're doing really well, and you're like, but I feel like I'm unraveling, mm. and really unhappy.
Yeah.
And then you sort of feel a bit closed off from the world because you feel guilty for feeling that way, and sometimes the path that is your own, no one else around you is walking.
Exactly. And I remember at the time I had so little kind of trust in myself. And that's something that I still struggle with. You know, you have to build on that. That I would test the water with like floating an idea with someone and be like, so I was thinking, I don't want to be a lawyer anymore. And then kind of gauge their reaction as to whether that was a good idea or not.
Oh God, I do that all the time.
And I got a lot of negative feedback. Actually.
Why were you doing it? Is it because you wanted validation to get out?
Yeah, exactly. And I couldn't give it to myself. And I couldn't just trust myself. I had this feeling that that's not what I wanted to do anymore. And it was growing. And, you know, it's a process of that little seed starts inside of you. And then it grows and grows and grows. And eventually it's like quite a loud shout that you can't ignore.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was like, okay, well, how's this going to be received? And I used to joke with a girlfriend so much, because eventually I did leave the law. But I was so attached to the external validation and the identity. There was a period of time afterwards where I would still go to dinner parties and introduce myself as, I used to be a lawyer. And it would go down like kind of weirdly, because they would be like, okay, cool. Like, you used to be a lawyer. So I eventually let go of that. And I joked with her because she had the same process of being an actress. She was so attached to the identity of being an actress, but she'd let it go. It was really making her unhappy. And so then there was a period of time where she would say, I used to be an actress. So I tested it and I got a lot of feedback from people that wasn't great.
Give me an example.
Words like career suicide.
To quit.
Yeah, to quit the law. And also a lot of kind of not really getting it, like saying, oh, but you studied for so long to become a lawyer and you, like, didn't it cost loads of money? And, like, it took so long because it's a long time at law school and then you've got a long time within the firm training.
To get anywhere, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've also got the echo chamber of working. So I would kind of float the idea with a couple of my colleagues at the time. And obviously they were like, terrible, that's a terrible idea. But they're validating their own life choices.
Yeah, totally.
And so in the end...
But do you not feel like you get to a point where you're just spinning around in circles?
Because
you're essentially seeking someone to tell you what you already know rather than trusting that inner voice. You want someone to give you that affirmation that you can, or permission to. You don't get it.
Totally. Well, that's why I have like a pathological addiction to tarot card readers.
Oh my God, yeah, I've definitely been there at those times.
In the like crisis, I go to a tarot card reader to tell me exactly what I know already.
Pausing this for a moment because I've got something exciting to share. Today's episode is brought to you by London Nootropics, the masters of crafting adaptogenic coffee blends that don't just taste heavenly, but they also boost your energy the right way. Now, we all love that zesty kick from caffeine. It snaps us awake by outsmarting those sleepy adenosine receptors in our brain. But here's the kicker. Caffeine can hike up our cortisol, giving us the jitters or anxiety, particularly if you're like me and caffeine sensitive. But that's where the magic of adaptogen steps in. These natural heroes level out our cortisol, smoothing the energy boost from caffeine without the downsides. Plus, while caffeine tends to rush in and fade away, leaving you crashing, adaptogens extend that energy, keeping you vibrant without reaching for another cup. So if you want to find your most productive self with Lion's Mane and Rhodiola in their flow blend, Cordyceps in Mojo is known to increase our aerobic capacity, oxygen flow, and boost ATP. So it's perfect before a run or workout or when you're feeling fatigued. So if you're intrigued and you want to dive deeper into their blend secrets and discover which adaptogens sync with you, try visiting their website. And because you're part of the Saturn Returns family, enjoy a special 20% off at London Nootropics Adaptogenic Coffee with the code SaturnReturns. Enjoy.
But yeah, exactly. But it was a perfect life lesson in the end, because it meant that I had to be brave and I had to make the change in the face of everyone saying,
"You're crazy.
Oh, I'm not really sure that's a great idea," or not getting it. And
because did you know what you wanted to do?
No, exactly, exactly. And there was just this kind of prevailing feeling of being misunderstood and not seen, because everyone was like, "Your life is fine. What's wrong with you?" You know? And so I had to really learn to be brave and make kind of weird or unpopular decisions and forge a path that no one really understood, but that felt good.
What did that look like?
Well, in the beginning, it looked like going to parties and asking anyone I met if they'd give me a job.
So you just threw yourself out there and were like, right, I've got to figure out what's next. But you'd already jumped.
I had already, I had briefly moved to a smaller law firm just to test whether it was the type of law.
It was the place.
Yeah, the place or the type of law. But I quickly discovered that actually that place was great, and it was good to show me that it really was the job, because the people were great and the work-life balance was a bit better.
Because I think that is actually quite valid, that for some people it might just be they're not in the right, they do like what they're doing, they're just not enjoying where they're doing it or who they're doing it with. So I think that's quite a good way of testing it. But also I feel that people, even if they're unhappy with what they're doing, they want that safety net to appear first before they jump, and that
totally
it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way. And what I've kind of, the way I make sense of it is quite a woo-woo explanation, but
you're on the right podcast.
Energetically you have to just take one step, and you don't need to know how to get to the end of the journey to make the first step. And I think a lot of people get paralyzed that they don't take that first step because they can't see everything perfectly laid out in front of them, exactly showing them that everything's going to be okay. And the funny thing is that everything will be okay, because you just work it out as you go along, because you have to. But it's so important to kind of energetically take that leap of faith into the unknown, because it's faith. It's actually faith that you have to have, that your faith in yourself, faith in your environment, faith that things are going to be okay, when you have a big unknown in front of you.
But you've got a feeling.
Yeah, you've got a feeling. And I think what I've been trying to cultivate since that time is connecting to that feeling.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even connect to it back then. And it was that, the ability to connect to how you feel about something is kind of new to me.
I think it's new to most people. I think we're educated and socialized out of it. And actually, I'm really feeling at the moment in my own life, even though I get to do the work that I do and I'm in the space that I am, recognizing how in my own head I've been and how in that sort of intellectual, linear, logical kind of, well, this is the plan, like this is the end game kind of thing. And then feeling very at odds with the feeling that I'm having. And this feeling, when I kind of tune into that and into my heart and into my body, is giving me these downloads that my head is like, we don't like that. Because it's basically saying, like, just trust the unfolding, but you've got to take that next. You've got to take a step, but we can't tell you exactly where it's going, but it's going to be okay. Just carry on. Mm-hmm. But then my head is like, doesn't like me. And I think everybody battles with that. And the world that we live in, to go in anywhere to anyone and say, you know, in my heart, I'm feeling like I should be guided in this way, people are like,
Oh my God, for real, literally, yeah.
People are like, well, she's lost it.
Yeah.
Especially, and like, London's really bad. It's like, I feel most people are just so leading from the head.
Yeah, really.
And then you become very disconnected from your body because you're constantly denying what it's telling you.
Yeah. And it's a, you know, I lived in London for many years and it's a tough environment. You've got to be a tough cookie to get by in London. You've got to earn a good amount of money. You've got to pay the rent. Everything's expensive. You've got to hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of your daily survival techniques tend to, or for me, they built an armor around my body. And so all you're left with is your monkey mind that's trying to say, your mind doesn't like the unknown for sure, and it likes to reason its way out of everything. And if you are even able to connect with your body, because I wasn't even able to connect with my intuition and my body because of that armor, the armor that you have to build to survive in a hustling city like London.
Or an environment like doing law.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Which was very cerebral, very male dominated. There's not much space for intuition in the law. I don't think anyone really wants a lawyer that's acting on intuition.
Although there could be a gap in the market. I don't know how it would go down. Intuitive lawyers.
Exactly. exactly. And so at the point that you even can connect with it, and then, like you said, sharing it, it's not the environment around us, depending where you are, of course, because I live in Lisbon. So
now you do.
Now I live in Lisbon. And so it's entirely normal on a Monday night to go to Kirtan, on a Tuesday night to go to a cacao ceremony, on a Wednesday night to do ecstatic dance, and then to share afterwards that you connected with your heart and your heart told you it was a good idea.
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, though, I do think it's available in London. You just might have to seek it out a little bit more.
It's more diluted, probably, because there's 9 million people living in London, and so you've got the full spectrum of everything. But and I think that speaks to how important it is, the environment that you're in and the echo chamber that you're in.
Yeah, so the environment, both location, city, where you're actually physically living, as well as the environment socially that you're occupying. Because I also do believe, you know, I've had experiences in London where I've been hanging out with certain groups of friends and then thought, I hate London. I never want to be here again. This city, I will never live here again. And I thought that in my 20s. And then now I'm back in London and have a totally different group of friends and have a very different experience that's far more aligned and in tune with who I am and what I'm about. But I do recognise that it's quite hard to stay and remain in one place and make those changes. It's almost easier to leave and then come back and start anew.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was part of what was difficult at the time during my Saturn return, which was when I eventually realised that getting married wasn't the right decision for me and that's not what I wanted to do. I was in this moment in my life where everyone was getting married. Mm-hmm. Kind of, we had this domino effect of proposals.
That happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, and there's this moment where everyone's getting married, it's wedding after wedding. It's super fun. And it's kind of cool to be doing all the same things as your peers in some way. But if you're the person that realizes that that's not for you, mm-hmm. you're suddenly the black sheep. And
also, that's a really scary place to be because it's obviously such a huge commitment one way or the other. You know, to commit to not doing it mm. is just as big as when someone's actually asked you and you're engaged and then to feel like and everyone congratulating you and validating you being like you've been chosen how yeah. wonderful
yeah yeah
and by like a lovely man to then feel this isn't what I want that must have been horrible.
Yeah, it was. I remember feeling very alone at the time, very, very lonely.
Because you couldn't really, did you feel you could speak to anyone about it?
No, and I think that was what was part of the problem with maybe having not expressed it to anyone. It then came as quite a shock to a lot of people when I finally did express it.
How long would you say you knew that it was wrong?
It's so difficult to say because it's like a gradual knowing that builds up and up over time. And then eventually you kind of are like between a rock and a hard place and you're kind of forced. It's like that voice that starts as a whisper and then eventually becomes a shout and you can't ignore it.
Or I like to think of the sort of pebbles that are thrown in your way and then the rocks set in and then the boulders and you're like, okay, I actually should have listened way back then.
Yeah.
But what was the actual... What did you feel when you were proposed to? Did you know it was coming?
I didn't know it was coming, no, actually, which was an incredible feat on his on his part because I'm so nosy. It's so difficult to surprise me. It's confusing because there was so much love. Mm. And love is in so many different forms. And it can be really confusing to feel an incredible amount of love for a person and admiration and just thinking that they are quite literally the most wonderful human being you've ever met. But also simultaneously know that that's not for you. Mm-hmm. And so that took a long time for me to unpick myself because one of the things that has really helped me is integrated family systems. Is that what they call it? Yeah.
Internal family system therapy.
Exactly. Exactly. I never remember the name because it was the first time when I did internal family systems, it was the first time I understood that you can have all these different competing parts of you mm-hmm. and that they are kind of all equally valid and that you have to give some space to all of them and they're doing different roles. And so at the time, it was very confusing to feel that love and then also feel that that wasn't the right thing. But I just knew I had this deep inner knowing that it wasn't the right thing and it wasn't just for me, but it was also for him. And one of,
as in you knew it wasn't right for him?
As in, I knew that it wasn't right for us. I had this deep knowing that it wasn't our path, either of ours. And it's sometimes challenging to be the one that recognises that.
Totally.
And the one that voices it, especially if maybe the other person hasn't recognised it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that really, really... I've found a lot of comfort in since then is that he's now married to the most fabulous girl and they've just had a baby together and the whole thing is glorious and they're, you know, and so that really in a way validates that knowing that back then was super, super difficult to kind of stick to.
Well, I think a lot of people stay in things because they're afraid to hurt the other person. But actually, I'm a true believer in, I think it's Elizabeth Gilbert who says there's no such thing as one-way liberation. Mm-hmm. So if it's liberating and freeing for one person, the other person might not see it immediately, but ultimately they will, and they'll be able to look back and be like, actually, that wasn't right. And it doesn't invalidate the love or the care that was present. But kind of going back to that stage, so you said that you started to know, but it wasn't like it was kind of growing over time. In what ways did you start to know? Like, how did that come through to you?
Yeah, it's really difficult to describe. I think it's the kind of the way that it's difficult to describe an inner knowing. Mm. And I think that's why I had spent my whole life not trusting it. It comes with this feeling in my body that I don't even know if I can articulate to you. But since then, now that I've tuned into it, it's a knowing that this is not for me, this is not the right path for me. Yet there's no real logical explanation of why it isn't the right path. And from the outside, it can even look like a great idea.
Sorry, could you repeat that bit again? It's just not...
So there's no real logical explanation for why it's not the right path for you or not a good idea. And from the outside, it might even look like a great idea. So your mind is kind of battling with this inner knowing, because logically, this is a great... it could be the relationship, it could be an opportunity, it could be so many things. But there's this kind of growing sense of unease or a feeling like it's not right. And then it manifested in anxiety, in insomnia. My unchecked intuitive messages always manifest in ways in my body, which back then I didn't know that
you didn't recognize the alarm bells kind of that were ringing.
Yeah, and I didn't even know about the connection between our emotional bodies and our physical bodies, and how a lot of the physical symptoms that we experience are connected to our emotional and mental and spiritual well-being. Mm. And so I just was becoming...
So you said insomnia, so you just weren't sleeping.
Yeah.
Were you not sleeping because you were thinking about this life that you were kind of committing to, or were you just not sleeping for other reasons? Or you thought there were other reasons?
Yeah, I thought it was other reasons. I thought I was just going through a bad patch of mm-hmm. sleep, and it was weird. And so I'd go to Holland and Barrett and buy all the sleep supplements, you know, mm-hmm. to treat the symptom, having not made any real connection to it. And also, bear in mind, I hadn't really done any self-inquiry up until that point. So I didn't really even know who I was outside of a relationship as well, because not only had we been together for 7 years, before that I had just been in back-to-back yeah. relationships. So I didn't know who I was, what I wanted. I couldn't articulate to you, but I knew something was wrong big time. And then the first time I even managed to articulate it to another person was when I didn't know what to do, so I got a psychotherapist.
So you confided in a psychotherapist as opposed to a friend?
Yes. And hilariously, I remember this so clearly. I employed this psychotherapist to get me married.
What?
As in, I was like, what's up with me? I need to, like, I'm feeling all these weird feelings and I need to get across the finish line. And so
and the finish line was getting engaged and getting married.
Yeah, because the
you wanted to get married. So
we were engaged, and I was having all of these confusing feelings. So then I started working with a psychotherapist
to work through your stuff.
Yeah, to work through my stuff, and also because the thought of like cancelling our wedding or our engagement was unthinkable to me. Mm-hmm. That wasn't an option at all. So I thought, I'll work with a psychotherapist and he'll help me to get married. And then it's all going to be fine. And he'll help me through all these really inconvenient feelings. And
then what happened?
It was the total opposite, because for the first time ever, I worked with someone where I could be totally honest. And, you know, with that psychotherapist relationship, you have an opportunity for the mask to come down.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not people pleasing with them so much.
I was going to say, I feel like a lot of people still do.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, I'm okay. They're like, but you're here.
Yeah, exactly. And he helped me to, for the first time ever, even try and identify, as I said, like what it is that I wanted or how I felt. Another thing that I really struggled with was when someone would ask me how I feel about something. I was so disconnected from any feelings, because I had spent my entire life really, 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 really expertly people-pleasing. And when you do that, you're so focused on other people's needs, you completely disconnect from the way that you feel, because it doesn't matter, because you feel good if you please someone else. Mm-hmm. So as long as you please someone else, everything's fine.
Which, again, for anyone to end an engagement is a massive thing, let alone someone that has that kind of programming of, like, as long as everyone's happy,
yeah,
I'll be happy, because you feel you're going to disappoint your partner, you're going to disappoint, I don't know, people that are coming to the wedding. Like, there's so many layers to that. Mm. Family.
It was about as bad and nightmarish as it could possibly be. For a people pleaser, for a recovering people pleaser.
And what was the turning point where you went to the psychotherapist to kind of get over the line, as you say, and get married, to realising, I don't want to get married?
I think I had that realisation in the sessions with him. So he helped me to unpack everything so much. And this is why, actually, in crisis, it's so helpful to work with
A professional
in so many different ways, because they can help you to unpack so many confusing things, and they don't have any bias.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had tried to unpack some of those things with people in my life, and bless them, people try to help you, but I even got some hilarious advice. Like, I think back to people who said, why don't you just get married and see how it goes? You can always get divorced. When I got that, I was like, that doesn't feel like my, you know, my greatest aspiration. And so he really, you know, they help you in a way that is so unbiased, and they really are just focused on what you're telling them, and they help you to unpack so many confusing aspects to situations that then I realized. And then it was one of the most painful things I have ever done in my entire life. It remains something that gives me a bit of a cringing moment when I think about it, because it was so painful. But as I said, in the end, it was 100% the right thing for both me and for him, even if we had to kind of forge through that really muddy, painful time.
And at the time, did he have, like, was he completely shocked when he said it?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise to him, because, as I said, I hadn't been good at communication.
How you felt, yeah.
And with myself, first and foremost. And then I didn't even know myself. So then, of course, it was going to be a shock to him, because it was a shock to me. I thought I was hiring the therapist to get married and make it all fine.
And how soon to actually the wedding date and making this decision? Because had you planned everything?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That was pretty tough, yeah. I think we had a few months before the wedding, and we had planned like the most ideal ceremony in the south of France, and invited hundreds of people, and it was going to be absolutely spectacular. And so I think, you know, it's a break. First and foremost, it's a breakup, but it's done quite publicly because
you've got to let everyone know.
You've got to let everyone know. And you've got to let everyone know pretty quickly.
Because people are making travel arrangements.
Yeah, exactly. And so suddenly it's quite public. And my tendency when I'm going through a difficult time is to really go into my shell.
And be private about it.
Very private and very... I love to be a little hermit and then I'll come out when everything's fine.
When you're healed. Yeah. Like, I can come out now.
Exactly.
So that, again, must have been... Whilst we're trying to, like, muddy through that emotional experience just between the two of you, let alone having to share it with everyone else.
Exactly. So it was really challenging. And the thing is that all of this was happening at the same time. So within the space of 6 months, I quit being a lawyer, cancelled my wedding, and then moved out of London. And everyone was like, are you okay, babe?
You're like, no, not really.
Exactly. And
did you move to Lisbon at that point?
No, at first I moved to Germany. I joined another startup. So there's been, there's a few... And this is speaks to the thing about taking the first step, because I joined another startup and that's where I really learned how to build a business, and we built an incredible business where they had invented a new children's toy, and it was super fun. So it was like quite literally playing. We were doing really fun things, but I learned the chaos of a startup and how to build a business, and I learned all of those lessons on the job.
Because I remember you telling me as well about that experience that you didn't actually have any of the credentials or that they were looking for. You just were like winging it and you were like, yeah, I can do those things. Yeah. And you just figured it out.
Yeah, because also weirdly, you know, even though you're very qualified as a lawyer, you're very qualified in a specialised area. Mm-hmm. And I think probably the same is true for many jobs.
Totally.
And you don't feel like you can move from being a lawyer to being a marketing person or...
Especially, I think there's a real thing around, and this is kind of in essence why I think the show has connected with people, is because people feel this idea that at 30... it's decided what you're doing with your life, who you're going to be with, the kind of way that you're going to live. And so you feel this real, terror when you get to that point and realize you might be with, in all the wrong places with the wrong person, or you might not have a clue, or all of it. And that feels quite frightening. Mm. But I think we're both testament to the fact that actually it's kind of great when you don't know what you want to do at that age and to just start over again.
Totally. My life has been, I'm a Scorpio, so my life is characterized by burning your whole life to the ground and starting again. I've reinvented myself God knows how many times. And in the beginning, you have to just wing it, and you have to kind of slightly convince people
that you're capable.
And, more often than not, you are capable. Mm. I'm a great believer that everyone can learn anything. If I, for God's sake, could learn to be a lawyer, anyone can. And if you can learn to be a lawyer, you can learn to do anything. And
also, just because you're 30 or at whatever age, it's not too late. No. Because I think that's a really sad thing that people live with, or they stop themselves from doing something that they desperately desire to do. And actually having the passion is the fuel that you need to learn how to do anything.
Totally.
If you don't have that, it might not work. But if you're passionate, you can learn what you need to learn to succeed at the thing that you want to do.
You know, I used
and
to...
And often that doesn't come because you don't have like the tools to kind of materialize it, because post-Saturn return, when you kind of know how to be disciplined, responsible, like it's much easier actually to realize it.
Totally. I, at the time, had this hilarious habit that I loved to do, which was Googling
people, stories about, so I learn from stories. Stories are super important to me. This is why Saturn Return was so great for me when I listened to it back then, because I heard all these stories and they expanded my horizons of what was possible. But one of the things I always used to do was Google people who have become very successful.
Later.
Yeah, like, so my favourite...
And it's amazing to hear how many there are.
There are like these people, artists and poets, who only started their artistic career age 80 and are now like world-renowned, incredible artists, like travelling the globe. People are paying thousands of pounds for their artwork. And they're just some kind of fab 80-year-old woman.
And then I love that.
Yeah. And then there are people, I remember there was one woman who set up a pet insurance business age 65 and became a multi-gajillionaire. And I just thought, amazing. I've got till 65 to do all these iterations of all these things. Because even Gabor...
Gabor has only really come into his moment, and he's how old?
He's in his 70s.
Yeah, like almost
and
80.
He's only really been, let's say, as
a household name
or becoming a household name over the past 10 years.
Yeah,
so it just goes to show that,
and it's not slowing down anytime
no
soon.
and it feels like, for me at least, because I'm such a mega fan, How did the world ever exist before Gabor? But, you know, his work and what he's been doing has only really come to the forefront relatively recently. Mm. And so I'm a great believer in find stories that reinforce what's possible.
Not what's not.
Exactly.
Because I think that the majority of, and the narrative generally for people is, I've left it too late. I'm never going to find my thing. I've got to settle for this. I can't reinvent myself now. Mm. You know, that is what I feel people think. And then it just makes everyone, it just dims your sparkle. Mm. You
know? And it really is just a limiting belief. Yeah. It might feel super, I'm not taking away from, it's not, I'm not saying that it's easy to do any of those things. It's not easy to change your career or make a big change in your relationship or do any of the things that might mean that you become more aligned. But everything is possible. And so you only have to look at all this crazy world that we're in to see what's possible, you know, AI and all the technological advances that 50 years ago could never have been imaginable, for you to see that really everything is possible and most things really are just a limiting belief, no matter how difficult it, you know, I think people like Joe Dispenza are really good for helping people to understand that you can kind of train yourself to overcome a lot of these limiting beliefs and change your life quite significantly.
By changing these patterns of thought.
Yeah.
I think a really important one to start with is just asking yourself, when you're having those thoughts, is it true? Mm. Is that actually factually true? Like if I say, because I feel for me, like I really want to put more creativity out into the world and like put more music out. And then occasionally, quite a lot, I get faced with this thought of, well, you've left it far too late. Like you had a window and you missed that window. And I have to be like, no, like why? Who says? Who created these things? And like none of it's real, but it's incredible how much of a force and a restriction that can be in our own lives of what we're capable of doing and creating.
Totally. And I think it's just coming back, constantly coming back to that inner knowing and checking in with yourself.
Yeah. And again, it's like when you have that feeling, when you check in and your body's like, no, we really want to do that. Mm. And you're like, but it's going to be so hard. And your head's like, it's such a silly idea. And your heart's like, but we've got to do it.
Mm.
You know, and I think that that's what I hope this conversation that encourages people to trust that a little bit more.
Mm.
But kind of back to your story in terms of then finding yourself in Lisbon, which it sounds like is like your place.
Mm.
and working at Harvest that very much aligns with who you are. Like, what would your advice be for people trying to figure out where they're supposed to be in the world and what they're supposed to be doing?
My advice would really be to prioritize your joy. So normally, if you prioritize your joy, even if that it doesn't always make sense, like even if it doesn't naturally, you don't naturally feel that it's going to lead you to a job opportunity, or you kind of have to get all of that out of your head, all the logical, reasonable things that your mind says, well, that's not going to work. And, yeah, you know, that won't pay the bills.
That doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. But just do it, go, whatever it is. So for me, I love things that help me to be in my body. And those are things like singing and dancing and being in nature is also really important for me. And the more that you prioritize those things, the more, firstly, I mean, on a very practical level, you're going to meet people. So mm-hmm. you're going to meet people who might be different to the current circles that you're in, or you will amplify that. But secondly, it changes up your energy. It shifts how you feel about yourself and how you feel. It lights you up. And the act of lighting yourself up, it has an effect on people who meet you and the things that are drawn into your field. And
your magnetism.
Exactly, exactly. And you're most magnetic when you, I mean, I think everyone knows this. I think everyone has probably felt at some point in their life, particularly magnetic when they're in their flow and they are feeling like, wow, like I just got a free cup of coffee and then I just got someone call me with a job opportunity, or like all, you know, all those things. And it's normally when you're feeling good about yourself, and it's rarely when you're kind of having a hellish day at the office. And prioritizing your joy can be really small things. It can be like one of the things for me is a lazy Sunday morning with a cup of coffee and a bed in, but in a lazy Sunday morning with a cup of coffee and a book in
It's a bit of a tongue twister. A bed and book. A book in bed.
A book in bed.
And it's the simple things.
It's
usually
the simple things, exactly. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to make it like, I know that there'll be some people out there that are panicking, thinking if they were like me, like, oh God, I'm now not prioritizing my joy well enough, you know? and those can often lead you on a path. So my experience is it leads you on a path, and you'll meet someone that might lead to something interesting. And at the very least, you'll just get in touch with what you like and what you don't like,
mm-hmm.
and get to know yourself better.
For those that are listening to this, but they're in a job that's doing really well, they're getting a lot of opportunities, as in, you know, they're not lacking in work, their life is like full, not necessarily like joyful, but full, but they have this kind of thing like, I don't really feel like this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and that niggling. And they're also people pleasers, so with all the opportunities that come in and people being like, oh, can we do this with you, and they feel that obligation to say yes because they're flattered, or they think it might be an opportunity, and their mind is going, oh, you should do that, it might lead to something. How do they kind of get off that train?
I don't know if I have really excellent advice for that, because it's a long process. I think I'm still working it out. Like,
because do you feel like you've now, with what you're doing, even though it's really aligned, you still can feel like, because before we were recording, just to add to our listeners, like we were both feeling, well, I'm feeling totally overwhelmed and like spread thin, but I'm also doing a lot of stuff that I really love, and it's hard to discern like, okay, well, why am I feeling so hectic? And again, it's like, I'll be doing things where people validate it, like, oh, you interviewed that person. That's amazing. This is all going really well. I'm like, but I feel like I'm unraveling.
Yeah.
And so trying to connect to myself, you know, feels kind of hard right now.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like I feel like there's a lot of noise.
Totally. It's a constant practice. It's a constant practice. It wasn't that I realized back then that I was a people pleaser with zero boundaries, and then I just overnight nailed it. And so I still find myself in those situations. I'm doing something that I absolutely love, like much like you. I there are days when I pinch myself, and the work is incredible. The people that I work with, and it's so inspiring. But I still struggle with boundaries and saying no. And so as a result, I can have workaholic tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's confusing, because it's confusing to feel burnt out and overworked at the same time as feeling a huge amount of gratitude and inspiration and love for what you do. And I think it's being able to hold all those kind of multiple truths that exist and have a lot of compassion and kindness for yourself, because it doesn't help to be hard on yourself in those situations. And I think a lot of people are very, very hard on themselves. And awareness is, I think there's a misconception that all of these things are healed in your life. But I've started to realize, I don't think you ever really do heal them. Mm. I think you just bring more and more awareness into your life. And so I don't know if I'll ever stop being a people pleaser, or that I'll ever really crack having excellent boundaries.
That it's just the awareness of when
exactly.
you are people pleasing or falling into that pattern. Because I think you're so right. When people are doing the work and they recognize... And they recognize that they go, oh my God, I'm repeating that pattern again. I blast, like a blast. I can't believe I just said blast. That's a word my mum uses. It's like her excuse of a swear word. It's such a like mum wordy. But when they're thinking, I can't believe I'm doing this again. And then they start beating themselves up about it. And like, I've done the work. Why am I still doing this?
Mm.
But actually, I think that's such a useful distinction. It's like, no, the evidence of the work is the awareness that you know that you're doing it.
Mm.
And then you can make different choices. But if you then start berating yourself in the process, it's like,
totally.
That's not going to get you anywhere.
Exactly. I love to bring my perfectionist tendencies into my personal growth and yeah. healing my spiritual life. I'm like, why aren't I a Buddha that's like completely unfazable?
Because I think in that space, it can become almost like competitive to be the most enlightened. And that's a whole level of BS.
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, the ego is sneaky.
It sneaks
into everywhere. And there's a lot of ego in even like personal growth and spiritual identities.
Spiritual ego is big.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I think kindness and compassion is just such a simple answer to whenever you find yourself maybe going into that spin or that spiral. Think, you know, would I be talking to my best friend like this?
Mm-hmm.
If your best friend came to you and was in your predicament, would you be kind
what
of
would you say?
Yeah, like would you be talking to them like that? And it takes quite a lot of discipline to catch the way you talk to yourself.
Because no one else can hear it. And sometimes I think we don't even acknowledge it. I definitely am guilty of that. I'm like, why do I feel really depressed? And then I realise how awful my internal monologue is.
Mm.
I realise, oh, that's probably why.
And so hard on yourself for expecting yourself to be able to do everything perfectly.
And if you make one mistake, yeah.
But everyone's winging it. Absolutely everyone's winging it. And that was something that I found quite a lot of comfort in, is when I joined the startup, that was one of those moments in life where I learned that practically no one knows what they're doing. And everyone's learning mostly on the job. Mm. And everyone's just working it out as they go along. And some people have worked it out already, in which case, great, call them and ask them if they've got any tips. But other people, most people, when they were first presented with whatever the challenge is, whether it's a relationship challenge or a work challenge, they're just working it out in the same way that you are as they go along. But there's obviously this culture that we have of presenting a perfect exterior.
And this massive misconception that everyone's figured it out and we're the only ones that are kind of fumbling through.
And that's why the, you know, networking organizations, like the kind of founders organizations and startup networking groups, are so successful, because for anyone who knows what it's like to be an entrepreneur and deal with the wave after wave of seemingly endless problems to solve, when you find your crew of other people going through the same thing. And that's why community is so important. So important, because it can be the entrepreneurial community, or it could be just like your community within Saturn Returns, of people who are going through similar things in their lives.
Mm-hmm. It is the most powerful thing. Because obviously that's one of many things both you and I personally, but also in what we do work-wise, have in common. But I've felt recently, in everything that I'm going through, the thing that I keep coming back to is I need to be around, like I need to physically be around my community of Saturn Returns to just feel like, to remind myself why I'm doing what I'm doing and who I'm doing it for. Because you can get really caught up in the day-to-day of running a business and being an entrepreneur and being a founder and get a little bit lost in it. And like you said, having community as well for work, where people can kind of give you a bit more of a guiding light, is also tremendously helpful, because it can feel quite isolating otherwise.
Yeah, definitely. I think it gives me perspective. Perspective is the best thing, because I can sometimes get very caught up in my own little world.
Me too.
And then what's quite funny is that then when you go and connect with other people and you talk to them, and they share their challenges, often I think, oh, I think I'll keep my challenges.
I know it's awful, but there's nothing best than realising you're not the only one that's struggling. You're like, okay, good. We're all in the same boat. None of us know what we're doing. I'll carry on.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And that maybe my challenges weren't as bad as they... And I don't mean that in the way that I need... to go
a sort of schadenfreude.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's just perspective. Mm. It's really good to get perspective. And I think it's really difficult. It's really easy to get caught up in our own little melodramas.
it's very true.
And perspective comes in so many other ways as well. Like traveling often gives me a lot of perspective. I love to travel because I will get so caught up in the kind of my life being the center of the universe, wherever that is. And then I go away somewhere and I'm like, huh, there's all these people living completely different lives where I don't even exist in this universe.
It's so true. And as a final thing, like for anyone that might be listening to this that is, let's say, engaged or in a relationship, in a long-time relationship, and just feeling like they don't know what to do, or perhaps in a career that they want to get out of, like, what would be your final piece of advice for them, having been someone that's gone through that and made very difficult decisions, given the sort of the tapestry of your character as being someone that desperately wants to please? What would your advice be?
I think my advice would be just to be really brutally honest with yourself, to get really as honest as possible.
What if people don't know how to do that?
Honestly, my process, I couldn't have done it without the support of a professional. So I really would say that, and there's so many different types of professionals. It doesn't have to be talking therapy. There are so many different things that people can help with. And I think that's a form of seeking community and seeking help. Get help, basically. Whether that help comes from a trained professional or whether it comes from community, or...
You don't have to figure it out alone.
You don't have to figure it out alone. And I promise that whatever it is they're going through, they're not the only one.
Mm. I often remind myself of that. And I think I was listening to an Oprah Winfrey podcast or something, and she said from all her findings of all the interviews and the people that she's spoken to, that there is not one thing that someone is experiencing that hasn't been experienced by someone else. Mm. And I find that so comforting, because we do get really caught up in our own experiences and stories, like, no one else has ever felt heartbroken like this, or no one else has felt like they're in the wrong career this month, or whatever it might be. And it's really freeing to know that there are plenty of other people that have, and it's about finding those people, I think, and connecting with them that can alleviate so much pain.
Mm. And then you can realise the boundless possibilities that previously felt completely impossible, because for me, the thought of cancelling my wedding and quitting being a lawyer at one moment in my life was totally unthinkable. And I would...
And yet here you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Well, thank you, madam, for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And sharing your story. I feel like you're the first, like, community member of Saturn Returns to share on this podcast. So I really loved having you on and having this conversation. I'm sure our listeners will too.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode and that it was something a little bit different. I found that the way Manon spoke about her engagement ending and this decision to have this massive career pivot was really inspiring, because I think we all know that feeling when our heart is guiding us somewhere else, and the struggle and the courage that it must take to actually listen to it when society is telling us to do the opposite. And this episode really reminded me of the importance of our own internal guidance system. And I really love what she said about kind of embracing and knowing that at her truth, she has this sort of gypsy heart. And I definitely relate to that. And so it was a reminder to me to trust the feeling and trust in the unfolding, even when you don't know exactly where that's taking you. So I hope it inspired and helped some of you that might be feeling a similar sort of way. As always, thank you so much for listening. And remember, you are not alone. Goodbye.